Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and once again, I'm joined by James Kovacevic. Hey, James.
Hi, Fred.
We just recorded a few minutes ago and wrapped up a session that we were talking about the SMRP conference. And one of the things we touched on caught my attention, so we made a quick note on it, because we also received a feedback from one of our listeners to the show saying, hey, you know, you talk a lot about WIBEL and reliability testing and data analysis type stuff, really for the product development world, which is true. That's kind of my background, and that's the area I typically work in. Although I've been picking up more and more asset management type work and bringing a lot of those tools, because that's what the contract is about, or the consulting is about, is they, my clients want to learn more about the data analysis side. But, and you're just out of the conference, and you mentioned that some of the people are not really familiar with WIBEL analysis or CRO-AMSA, reliability growth modeling. They're probably not familiar with system level reliability modeling like fault tree analysis or tools like that. What's your take on that question, James? Because you're much more steeped in the asset management world, but is my perception, you know, just a minority of people that we're seeing, or is this more widespread?
So I think, you know, we talk about WIBEL, we talk about those reliability growth analysis, we talk about fault tree analysis and all those other great reliability tools in the asset management world. And some organizations and some people use those tools quite effectively in asset management. But I don't think as many people are using them that should be. And I think it stems from a couple of reasons. One, I think it's, you know, awareness or training on that topic. I think another piece is data. Data is a huge piece. And if you don't have the failure information, how can you run those analysis? So I think there's two major barriers to or preventing us from using those within asset management as much as we should be using them.
Well, I mean, there's usually a ton of data in a factory. And almost every factory I've been in is they're tracking uptime by just, you know, they're looking at their core pieces of equipment and saying, well, how many hours per the 24 hours you should be operating? Is it operating? So they're, and it's a lot of that's automated though.
Right? So let me backtrack. So we have data, we don't have information.
Okay.
So what I mean by that, we have a ton of data points. So like you said, there's a lot of SCADA systems that are out there that'll track the second a piece of equipment went down to the second was back up operating at full performance. It'll track that information for us.
Well, that's, you know, and senior managers cares about uptime efficiency and so on. And in some cases, it becomes detrimental where you're deferring maintenance and pushing, doing quick fixes to get things running just to pay it later. There's that kind of data, but.
But that data is very limited. It says when the equipment went down, when it came up. It may not say why, or maybe it'll say, you know,
sensor this six. Piece. I've heard that one before.
It may be that. Or, you know, I've seen some systems set up where they calculate everything to the second, but it'll, on a packaging line, it may just be a filler that mm-hmm. it tells us. And then it's up to the operator to go in and manually select what the subcode is, sub reasons. And so on and so forth.
Oh, I've seen that on the filler where it was down every 20, 30 seconds, roughly, and sometimes every 3-4 seconds. And the operator just didn't have time. They would just hit reset, go, reset, go. And if they hit a second button, it was just random.
Yeah. And not only that, you know, we're just capturing, you know, maybe the component on that piece of equipment that was giving us the grief. Mm-hmm. It wasn't telling us about the damage. Wasn't telling us what the cause was. What we weren't getting is we weren't getting that true failure mode. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. without that true failure mode, it's very hard to do those WIBEL or reliability, maybe not reliability growth, but to do that WIBEL analysis. We have to when you do a Weibull analysis, we have to focus on that one specific failure mode.
Right.
And the majority of times we don't have it.
No, no, I don't expect the operator to be, you know, doing the data analysis and that work to be great. And I've seen it in a few places where they are, but it's the reliability engineer or the maintenance team that says, you know, this type of pump we're using is it problematic or not, or it hits a high Pareto or it shows a high risk for their system, and then go get that data and do the analysis and base your decisions on the data. That's where I see the breakdown, though, is that when they, like you mentioned, is that we have lots of data, but it may not be, I can't isolate it to just this class of pumps that I'm interested in.
Exactly. And one of the other things I see is, you know, any good maintenance program, you know, if a mechanic goes to do a repair, they should be recording what failed, why it failed, all that great information, and storing it within the CMMS.
Or at least not obscuring or, you know, capturing the data as they're doing it, rather than say, oh, just ran, here's the parts I used.
Exactly.
It doesn't really help.
And that's a huge thing to overcome for a lot of organizations, is to have your mechanics capture that right data. Another piece is, a lot of organizations I work in, you know, they have maybe a maintenance planner, a storms guy, some supervisors, a maintenance manager, and their technicians. Mm-hmm. They don't have a maintenance or reliability engineer on staff. So then that falls to, say, a planner to do part-time, is look at what's giving us the most grief. But they're a planner. They're not
right,
they're a reliability engineer.
They don't have that
training for Weibull, you know.
Right. Unless they go to the conference.
I think that's another barrier.
Yeah. And I've run into a few people that they'll pick up those tools and they'll have one or two pieces of it. But then I get a call of, well, I've getting this weird pattern on here. What does that mean? And so it's a little bit of statistics and curve fitting, regression analysis. That goes a long way, because in some cases, they're very, very data rich and you can do a lot with it. Other cases, it's going to take back to that mechanic to say, here's why we need this information. Here's how it's going to make your life better. I think there's a barrier there of a mechanic being told, get it up and running, right? Let's get this fixed. Let's get it up. Let's go. Versus the failure analysis side of it, the real diagnostics work. And then we're walking in saying, oh, and besides that, record everything and write all this information down.
And then
that's not happening.
And then going right along with that data piece is, you work with, you know, I work with organizations, and you look at their CMMS and their equipment hierarchy. Mm-hmm. They know that what they're working on is a pump, but it's not set up in the CMMS any proper taxonomy or naming conventions.
This could be a little air pump that's cooling something, or it could be a hazard chemical pump that's, you know, 800 gallons a minute.
Exactly. So trying to limit that to a specific class of pump and then how it's being operated is a huge, huge issue. Mm-hmm. And then if you think of some sites, you know, they may have one or two single production lines. They may only have one or two pumps on site, mm-hmm, that are that same class. They may only fail once every couple of years. So it's going to take you 10 years to get the data you need to do a basic Weibull, because it doesn't fail often, right?
Right.
So it's not like product reliability where we're going to produce 2 million of these phones, test a whole bunch, and then we're going to get all that warranty stuff coming in. We don't have that volume of information first in particular cases.
In a lot of cases, no. And then the other part is that you may have a whole lot of parts and you get tons of data, but they really don't matter. You know, bearings on a roller. A system. Being able to predict and the loads that are varying across those plates, so many different variables, and how often they're used, and maybe they're sealed bearings, so you don't even have maintenance on it except when one locks up or you notice it needs replacing. You can get lots of data, but are you going to take any action on it?
Exactly.
That's kind of my point. Is the hard part is that when I've walked into a couple of these different plants, is they have so many sensors on their equipment they were getting terabytes of data every month. And it was overwhelming just to parse it, to figure out what to do with it. So all we did was made some cumulative plots of the data we had and started doing just basic Pareto analysis with some data to help confirm where to dive deeper. And then as we found the things that, oh, we can, maybe we can do something about this, then we broke out the Weibull analysis. So it was a mix of, yeah, we have some data, or with some little bit of effort, we can get the right information. And then we could focus on the more detailed analytics. It's you don't have to have a Weibull plot with every piece of equipment. That's just overkill. But on the other token is you do need to take a look at the data you are collecting. Otherwise, I ask the question of, well, why are you collecting it?
Exactly. And so if I were to advise the listeners of, if they wanted to use these analysis within the asset management world, what are the few things they should do? First, make sure your equipment hierarchy is set up properly within your CMMS. So you can classify pumps, you can group different types of pumps together, different types of equipment, for example. Mm-hmm. Set up that properly so you can look for those trends across a specific type and model of pumps if that's what you're having issues with.
That's right.
You know, get that right. Then you need to set up an easy means of collecting that failure data. So having not only the time the equipment went down, time it came up, but also the failure mode that occurred. So one of the things I've seen with a lot of CMMSs that works quite well is when you select this class and type of equipment, you get this specific list of object damage and cause codes.
Right.
So that way the list is short, it's easy to pick, and it makes it easier to collect that data. Because if a mechanic has to scroll through 100 different objects, you know, 50 different damage codes and a whole bunch of cause codes, chances are they're going to pick the first one or the last one on the list every time.
Yeah. I had one guy tell me he always picks the seventh one so he doesn't look like everybody else's.
Exactly. So, you know, you got to make that data collection easy. Whether it's mobile, whether it's on paper, it doesn't matter. Just make sure it's easy. Mm-hmm. You know, and then to keep the mechanics using, providing that information, you got to demonstrate it's being used. If you're not using it, they're not going to collect it forever for no reason.
That's right.
They want to see the results from it.
That's right. It's got to, and that goes back to the culture piece too. I've run into mechanics that are like, why would I want to make our equipment more reliable? I won't be employed anymore. I won't be able to go fix things. And it's that shift in culture from reactive to proactive that can limit your data collection process too.
But it's also not just the culture from a mechanic standpoint. Mm-hmm. It goes above that. It goes to the production supervisor, the production manager, maybe even the site director. Mm-hmm. If they're constantly pushing and, you know, celebrating that hero who went in and fixed that repair within a couple minutes, if they keep celebrating that, they're celebrating the wrong behaviors.
That's right. That's right.
What they need to do is they need to focus on the person who went in, took their time to understand what was wrong, repaired it properly, and recorded the right information so we can use that in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, the impact of that is, especially if it goes that step and says, all right, here's the critical piece of information so we can avoid downtime in the future, and say, you know, for the rest of the year, we shave off a couple of percentage points of downtime because of a preventative action, has way more impact to the organization than the hero that fixed something overnight.
Exactly. It's, you know, if I think about it in a common plant situation, a belt breaks, you know, the hero mechanic's going to walk in, he's going to not even loosen off those pulleys. He's going to roll the belt onto the pulleys, damaging it, causing, you know, a premature failure, and not understand what actually happened. Mm-hmm. I think of the proactive maintenance tech who went in. He's going to go in, he's going to understand, he's going to check some bearings, he's going to check alignment of that stuff to understand what caused it to break in the first place. Mm-hmm. Then he'll loosen everything off, put the belts on, tighten everything back up, then align it properly. Yeah, it took more time, but the belt was installed properly. Chances are we got failure data we can actually use. And it's not going to fail for the same reason within the next 24 hours.
That's right.
That, you know, with the hero mechanic, maybe it will, maybe it won't, but we don't have that assurance.
That's right. Yeah. It's, there's a lot of moving parts in the overall process, and getting to the data analysis, it does take a little bit of statistics and knowledge, and also the understanding of what you're looking for. And it really goes back to that failure analysis, the root cause analysis type things, failure mechanisms in particular, for a good Weibull analysis. There's plenty of tools like cumulative plots and mean cumulative functions that allow you to look at repairable systems and glean quite a bit of information off it. But to make systemic changes, you got to really look for what are those elements that you can that are essentially wearing out. We use all kinds of information from Weibull to guide reliability-centered maintenance, but it's those wearouts where we really can make a lot of benefits in the preventative world, in the predictive world. So. A lot of moving parts. It's a lot to ask a statistician to do. It's probably why they're not there.
Exactly. It's just, you know, it's if the equipment fails, and that's, you know, one of the things I see as well is it's going to cost us, say, $100,000 a year for a reliability engineer. That's a lot of money, especially if we're not going to see any results right away.
That's right.
But if you look at the downtime that they're accumulating, chances are they're losing that within a week or two. But you know, it's just a different type of expense, you know, the expense of your equipment not operating or the expense of a person. You know, for some reason, I find organizations struggle to add that person when we know the benefit would be there if they added that reliability engineer.
I wonder how much that is, James, though, with that idea of the culture we talked about earlier, where if I hire a reliability engineer, I'm essentially acknowledging that we're in a reactive mode. And that my top priority is just keep it running. Where if I hire a reliability engineer, they're going to want more data. They're going to want to do more detailed analysis. They're going to, you know, make us do more preventative things, which on a day-to-day basis looks like it's going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, but it's a situation of pay me now or pay me later. If we take the time to do stuff properly up front, we will have less downtime and less cost in the long run. Mm-hmm. We'll extend that maintenance interval because we have the data to support it. Maybe we won't be replacing certain aspects because we know it's not wear out, it's random. And then we'll eliminate that whole maintenance routine altogether.
That's right. You know? Or vice versa. We take something we do on a scheduled basis and we look at the expense of it and we realize, oh, we could double the interval or we can track vibration and predict when it's going to fail more accurately. So we can really loosen the off of the schedule basis and use those resources to do other things rather than those monthly tasks.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think, you know, to justify those resources for organizations, whether it's a reliability engineer, whether it's, you know, someone to help collect that data, set up the data collection system to do those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I think where we struggle as maintenance, reliability, and asset management, not so much the asset management end, but the maintenance reliability professionals is translating what we want to do into terminology that the C-suite understands.
Well, that's so, money, throughput, you know, product delivered.
Exactly. But I think it's, you know, I think it's vitally important for any maintenance reliability that wants to justify these things to understand finance. You don't have to be an expert. Well, understand some basic terminology, some basic metrics like return on net assets, stuff like that. If we can have that conversation with senior leaders a little bit more in their aspect, I think it would go a long way.
That's right.
To them supporting what we're trying to do at the ground level.
Well, early in my career, I you know, it was one of those lunchroom conversations. Oh, where do you work? And this guy said finance, and my head started spinning with all the possibilities. I need you on my side. I need to understand how you talk to the senior folks. And, you know, it created a quick friendship because I was so curious and he could see the stuff I was doing had a huge impact. And so we created just an informal little team that allowed me to make much more impactful presentations. But he also got great insights as to which projects were worth funding. He's got the engineer's perspective of how do I prioritize these things? And from a So they make friends with somebody in finance. I haven't ever asked somebody to go make friends with people in marketing yet. So I haven't found a good reason for that, but they do have good food at lunches. So maybe that's a good enough reason.
Exactly. But getting back to the topic, you know, we're not using Weibull enough because of the lack of good data, the specific failure modes. And mm-hmm. I think the lack of resources to use that to perform those analysis and actually get down to it.
Yeah, the payback's there. I think it takes a little commitment to bring on the talent or to educate the people on your team and give them the time to go do it. It does take a little bit of time to come up, to learn those tools and to interpret those graphs and all that data, change that data to information. And the hard part is it takes time for results to come back. But the deeper level of understanding allows you to make systemic changes that will pay for itself over and over and over again through your organization.
There was a presentation I remember sitting through, and the gentleman presenting it said it was the bow wave effect. Mm-hmm. To improve reliability in your organization, you're going to see a little uptick in costs immediately mm-hmm. because you're hiring that reliability engineer, you're getting that training in place. But over time, it's going to come down. So you just have that little initial upfront cost, the investment, and then your total cost is going to come down dramatically as a result of that.
That's true. I think I could cite a couple other examples here where you can start seeing those costs fairly quick. It's a matter of how much investment you're putting into it and how much support you're going to provide it. But sometimes it takes more effort than others, but it can be done. And I think any organization I've done any analytics in is very quickly realized the power of it and how much better their decisions are. So it's a virtuous cycle once you get started.
It is. It's just getting started. And, you know, the sheer thought of collecting data, I think, overwhelms people at times as well.
Oh, it certainly does. All right. Well, that might be a topic for another episode, James, is dealing with the overwhelmed effect or how to not jump when the fire bell goes off every time to run down to the floor to fix something. Although that may be politically difficult to do in some places.
Yeah, it will. But yeah. Thinking about this very topic, though, Fred, I know we did a series of posts on this. Mm-hmm. I don't know, what was it, 6 months ago?
Yeah, I knew when we set this topic up, we said, we got to point to that. I almost forgot. Thanks. Yeah, it was about 6 months ago. And it was, seven articles, I think?
Yeah, and it talked about how to get meaningful data out of your CMMS history, the different types of analysis you could do with that data to really drive and leverage some improvements in your organization. So I know we talked about Weibull, reliability growth, mean cumulative plots we talked about. So, mm-hmm. And that's available as an ebook on your website, I believe.
It is. So we'll add that to the show notes. I just made a note for that. So hopefully we remember to do that. And that'd be cool. So, you know, James, I'm really glad you took up the invite to join us on the show because I know it's a growing audience for the Sendo reliability, and it's the overlap between product development and asset management is tremendous. There's a huge amount of things there, different constraints, different priorities in some cases, but many, many parallels. So I'm glad to have your perspective on it from an asset management view and the experience you bring to the table. So I want to just say thanks for joining us on the show and look forward to talking to you again and many more episodes.
All right. Thanks, Fred. And if I may, just mm-hmm. For anyone interested, there is a weekly podcast called the Rooted in Reliability Podcast, where we talk about these very topics and maintenance reliability every week. It's also on the reliability.fm network, so you can find it there. And we talk about how to manage those spare parts, the work management process, all those things that we talked about today that allow you to really start collecting that data and using it.
That's right. You also do some really cool interviews with some of the other practitioners and folks in the field. So I like the mix that you provide in that show. That's pretty cool.
I try and leverage the industry experts, the industry thought leaders, because who better to have us than who better to have on the podcast than those recognized experts that bring years and years of experience in those specific areas.
I think you just called me old, James. Although I've only done a few shows with you, I like the other folks that you've got on there are very highly respected. And so I feel fortunate that you invited me to join you on some of those. But no, that's, yeah, definitely check out the Rooted in Reliability. It's hosted by our friend here, James. And also, if you've got comments or ideas or other suggestions you'd like us to, if with James in particular or with any of our co-hosts, you know, please let us know. Head over to reliability.fm and you can find the four different shows that are available now in the podcast network. And you can find comment fields and ways to leave suggestions and things like that. And we'd love to hear from you. This topic actually came from one of those listeners that had a question for us. And so we're very happy to talk about that topic. And hopefully it helped. Let us know if this shed any light on it for you or gave you some ideas. We'd love to hear that also. So with that, James, I think we'll wrap it up.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.